Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'll see you. Okay, you ready? Sabine Sadiq.
I'm ready.
Okay. Boy. Yeah. So Sabine is on the podcast. She's one of my close friends. We just went to Hawaii in October. Had a great time. And I was thinking about talking to you about, well, okay. Well, firstly, I was listening to the Two Johnnies. They're a big famous Irish podcast who I absolutely love. And they were talking a bit on one of the episodes about privilege. I can't even say that, privilege. And I've heard it on TikTok a lot. And it's basically saying like, oh, if you're good looking, you get more things. And oh, people like you more and all of that stuff. And I get all of that. But what I want to talk about is the opposite side of that. So when people think you're pretty, I feel like you can be quite judged sometimes.
Yes.
Not to be like, you know, oh, it's so hard to be
I'm
pretty.
So hot and I have so many issues and people are just can't handle my hotness, Katie. It's so hard.
But I did think about you with that. Let's say, you know, we've talked about in the past having people maybe like judge you. And I think, and you've been like, why is this happening? And me in my head, I'm like, because you're a goddess, you know, and wow. It's like, no, but I'm serious. I do think sometimes when someone is good looking, nice, funny and sociable, it's easier for people to feel a bit of jealousy or resentment because they're seeing characters they don't have. And I think it's quite unfair. And I'm like, I get the pretty privilege thing, but before anybody comes and attacks me for this, I just thought it'd be interesting to talk to you a bit about how, because I've even had a friend in school and girls were really mean to her. And I was like, oh, it's just because she's hot. Like, that's all it was. It was because she's hot.
I mean, outside of comedy, I've had some falling outs with a couple of my friends that wouldn't want to say that it was this jealousy or intimidation or anything about me looking nice. But one of my friends actually, okay, I set her up with her now husband. And she stopped being my friends after she stopped being my friend after that, because she thought, now I know now that she thought that I was going to take him away from her or something because I'm attractive. And I was like, bitch, you're pretty too. Like, this is so dumb. Please don't do this game with me. And so she cut me out of her life. They got married. I wasn't invited. This is my childhood friend. And I was so hurt. And I was so upset. And I didn't know at the time that that's what it was. And then later on, she just, after her life was like set and they were married and like comfortable and happy, she was like, I want to be your friend again. And I was like, No. This is not how this works. If you are uncomfortable with me and insecure about yourself, and I don't trust you anymore. So I think female friendships have there's certain people, like, it just hasn't worked out well sometimes.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that is that we've always been told, you know, so let's say, I'll give you an example. Some guy doesn't choose you and he chooses a hotter girl. And then your girlfriends will be like, but you know what? I bet she's a bitch. Or I bet she is like, you know, they say something so that you feel better about the fact that they're good looking. Or if you see someone really good looking and doing well, people would be like, oh, well, I bet you they have a terrible life at home and I bet you they have a shit relationship. And it's like an awful thing that people do where it's like, no, they could just have it all. And like, yeah, things aren't working out for you yourself right now. But trying to make someone like think that someone else doesn't have, you know, like, oh, well, they're really pretty, but I bet you, you know, they I'm trying to think of a good example. Oh, I bet you they don't like have a good job, or like just trying to make themselves feel better that someone has.
Yeah, like putting them down in some small way to make it okay that they're this hot, attractive person and getting things, like, because that makes them feel better if they see. I mean, and I believe that everyone has their own struggle, so I definitely always keep that in mind. But it's like, dude, just appreciate that there's someone. Just, I don't know. It's like a lack of love. I think that it's, I don't know. Lately, I've just really been into feeling like, okay, if someone's successful and they're a friend of mine, like, I just want to give them love and I want to wish for them to have more. And there's people that are hotter than me, prettier than me, more successful than me. Like, if I'm gonna compare myself to everyone, I'll freaking lose my mind. Like,
yeah, and you're right. And it's even with not just pretty, it's like success. So if you see someone doing successful, they're like, well, because instead of being like, okay, well, I can just work, or like, oh, you look right place, right time for them, you know, that it'll happen for me eventually, or if it doesn't, that's just kind of life. They're like, well, you know what? Yeah, I guess they got this, but they have IBS. So you're like, okay. But it's
that's just arm crowds when I do like my IBS stuff, and they're like, oh good, she shits a lot. Like, I love her. I love that chick. She cannot stop shitting. And my IBS is kind of gone now, so it's like the joke doesn't even work. Like, only when I like drink too much coffee, like, which I'm doing now. Like, I do this to myself.
But sometimes I'm like drinking coffee and I know it's going to give me my IBS and I know I'm going to be sick, and I have to be like, why am I doing this to myself? This is like another like little self-torture. But yeah, I don't know.
I have to think about that too. Honestly, I do it and I'm like, am I doing this because it's familiar to me? And there's like a comfort in the familiarity of I am the person that has IBS and this is what happens to me. But it's like, if I don't drink these things, if I make myself better, that's kind of unfamiliar territory sometimes.
So true. And if you're better and everything, here's the other thing. If you're better and everything's going well, sometimes that can be hard. Like, I find sometimes I'm like, am I like running myself into the ground? Because I get colds all the time and I make myself sick. And I'm like, oh, when I get a cold, I give myself permission to rest. Or when I have IBS, I give myself permission to rest. And it's like, do I subconsciously make myself sick just so I can fucking take a day off, which is ridiculous.
Oh, that could be a subconscious thing too. Honestly, there's IBS. I mean, it's all like your gut brain stuff. So it's all, it is very psychological, like IBS and like dealing with it. And I think you're really good about it though. I feel like you just stick to the right I got better about cheeses after we went to Hawaii, and you were like, you were strict on like, I'm not doing dairy cheeses. Yeah. And I was like, why am I not doing that? So I'm like learning the ways, but
I just can't give up coffee though. Coffee's like, it feels so adult and it's so like strong. I used to smoke cigarettes, so coffee feels like a cigarette for me.
Yeah. You gotta have a vice. It's okay.
Okay.
I think we're good enough where it's like, we can have a couple of things. Like,
yeah. And also, so like with the pretty thing, there's so much more with the pretty privilege that I can't even like
understand. I know, I was like, wait, we went off track and like went straight into IBS land.
No, but I also think that also shows, I just really want to, because I kind of wanted to highlight that how we shouldn't really compare ourselves to people, because also like, so they were saying, you know, there's this thing and there's all, it's very true, there's like this face on Instagram, and then they were talking about European beauty standards and all of that stuff, and I totally get that, because like, oh my God, I didn't know TikTok was putting a beauty filter on. And I was like, I'm looking well today. And then I caught myself in the mirror and I was like, that's not me. That's the person.
TikTok is doing that? Like, when you record, it just puts that automatically?
Automatically. It gets rid of your pores and all. So that's like quite shocking. And yeah, so they shouldn't do that. And I understand all of this, but what was I going to say? What was my point? Oh, with prettiness, I think everybody is pretty. Like, there's the ability to be pretty. You can, especially for, you know, like if it's just like your outfit or your I color in my eyebrows and I feel like that helps a lot, or like whatever. But when it comes down to it, it's confidence. And so it's all it is. Because like, people would say to me, like, you know, guys later would be like, oh, I had a crush on you back in such and such. And oh, you like, you know, and I'm like, I would have never thought at the time, you know, I don't look at me and think, oh, that's the face. That's not the Instagram face they're promoting, because I have a gap in my teeth. No one's really promoting that. I don't wear makeup.
Why aren't they?
Yeah, I know, right? I don't wear mascara. You know, long lashes is the thing that's being promoted. But, you know, it's. Yeah. Some people will tell me I'm pretty. Now, of course, others don't think that. They're just not going to say that to me, and that's fine. But my point is, it's easy. Anybody who looks anyway is going to be pretty to somebody, you know. Absolutely. And if you're confident, and I'm pretty self-confident, I'm just like, this is how I look, and that's it.
I'm pretty. You don't need anything, and you're beautiful. But like, I agree that where Instagram does have that filter of teeny tiny nose, huge cheekbones, I mean, big ass brows, and like full lip, and it's like, it's everyone's supposed to be that. And then you see all these people getting surgeries to look exactly like that. And it's like, no, stop it. I hate these filters. I hate all of this stuff. It's obnoxious. And like, I wasn't confident in college. I never went on dates. My IBS was so bad that I didn't even feel like a normal person. I was like, oh, I'm just trash. I'm like, my body's broken. I feel broken. I didn't feel worthy of dating. Like, zero self-esteem. Oh my God. My whole life I had zero self-esteem. So now I'm like 31 in my 30s. I'm like finally confident and feeling myself. And I've attracted so many, dates, men, like all of that stuff. Like now I'm actually like dating, and I wasn't attracting that. And
I think you're so right, because so I have people that I would say are not stereotypically beautiful, but they just have this confidence and they attract, and it's women and men. There's one guy specifically, I know it's easier maybe for guys, because I think women aren't conditioned to look as looks as much, because you're more like, okay, I need the personality to get me through a lot of this stuff. But one guy, and he is 100% not good looking, not attractive. Well, okay, I'll say not good looking, but his confidence, I mean, we were friends and he was getting girls that I'm like, whoa, way out of his league. But he's funny, he's chill, he's good, like he's confident. And the main thing is confidence, because actually sometimes when you get to know him, you're like, you're not even that nice of a person, you know. And he was getting women out left, right and center, but it is down to it, confidence. And then same for what you said. So you look at you, you're a beautiful woman, but I do think if you're saying that you were shy and unable to talk to people and kind of awkward, and
not comfortable in my body,
people sense that, and they're not going to, you're not going to get this so-called, because I think pretty privilege, if you're like, if I walk into a store and I order a coffee and they give me like a little bun, and then someone says, oh, that's because the person thought you're pretty, I'm like, well, there's also more to it. I probably was like, hi, how are you, have a great day,
thank you so much.
And I think because I'll look at people and I'll be like, oh my God, to my friend, I'll be like, that girl's gorgeous, like you should talk to her. And then that person will be like, oh, I'm not attracted to her. So it's like this notion of the thing on the Instagram is very different. But in real life is different. It's not someone who walks up with that fake features or whatever isn't going to be, it's not like in real life, it's all about energy, I feel, and vibe and.
Totally. Oh,
yeah.
I completely agree. Yeah. You feel that energy right away. Like it's magnetic. Like if you're confident, you're feeling yourself, you're good to people, you're attracting it. You want that engagement and people want to talk to you because you have something there. Like it's, and then you become beautiful just because of what's inside. Like,
yeah. And it doesn't matter. Yeah. What you look like, what weight you are, what height you are, I really think that's what comes true. Confidence is everything. It's even with us like selling a joke. And what you said about the big eyes and small nose, I read online that we are conditioned to fall in love and protect big eyes and small noses because all babies are born with large eyes and small noses.
I remember hearing that from somewhere.
Isn't that wild? So that whole like big eye and small nose, that's where that comes from. My nose gets bigger by the fucking year.
Every year noses get bigger. Are you kidding me? This is the first time in my life my nose finally fits my face. But like it was big my whole life. Like it's, yeah, I've got just a nose.
But you see, I wouldn't think that about you. So that's the other thing. You're looking at people going, oh my God, you're like, they're beautiful, fuck them. And it's like, for sure, they look in the mirror and they're probably seeing something totally different. They're not seeing, a lot of time we have a different, there's this famous science-y article thing. I read all this weird shit sometimes and I don't remember where it comes from, but it says if you were ever to meet a clone of yourself, you wouldn't recognize yourself because your image of yourself is very different to what other people see. So if you walked up to you on the street, you wouldn't go, there's Sabine. You'd be like, you might say, oh, they look similar, but you wouldn't, because your image is so different to what other people see. Isn't that wild?
That's really weird, because I'm sitting here like, no, I would know. But I'm like, maybe I wouldn't. I guess so. Like, I don't know what I see. I feel like I see my high school self. I don't even know what I see.
Well, Brendan Zaglo put up a video of me for his, like, he's doing this, like, losing weight funny blog thing. And he asked me to do this, like, and I did it. And then when I saw the video, I was like, that's not me. Who's that person? That's not how I saw myself doing it. In my head, that's not what I look like. So, and the other thing as well with the being seen as an attractive woman. You know, people think, oh, you've got everything, that's good. But I actually think, you know, let's say for like you, what happened to you with your friend, now all of a sudden she thinks the husband's gonna run off with you, like, which is so wild. But and then if people are jealous or insecure, they kind of find it uncomfortable to be around you. I watched in this show, and she said it's really hard to be a funny, attractive and successful woman. You're hated by men and women if you are.
Where did you read this? What was this?
Oh, this was from The Magicians, which is a show, not a real show, just like a fake. But she's like this boss bitch in it, and I was like, oh, that really did relate, because it is kind of hard for people just to be like, yeah, you're successful, you're attractive, you're funny. Like, people just want something to be wrong. They're like, maybe she has cancer. You know, it's like,
yeah, that's what I mean. It just freaking makes me so angry, because it's like, okay, like if a dude was like a hot, successful, and like, you know, everything, it's like respected and like, you know, it's like amazing. Like, good for him. We love this guy. He's so hot and funny and successful. We want him, like, thrive, dude. But if my situation is like that, everyone, they want to find something wrong.
Yeah, and I think, like, for female comedians, for the listeners, I think this is an interesting thing to also have, like, to tell you guys about, because so a lot of female comedians would have dressed ugly or dressed down so people could laugh at them, and now, you know, female comedians are like, no, fuck it, I'll dress how I want. I want it, if I'm pretty, I want to be pretty, or I want to feel pretty. So then you go into a show and you gotta work harder than any guy, because if people are there on a date, which I think is what you experienced at the last show you were on, where guy isn't going to laugh if the girl's not laughing. The girl doesn't want to laugh because she's like, why is my guy laughing at that hot? Oh, that girl's hot and funny. So I think I've seen that a bit with like hot female comics, where they have to struggle a bit with that.
Yeah. This is so funny, because I feel like every time we talk about this, I'm like, no, I think I'm fine. I'm not this like hot or whatever. Like, I feel like I'm being so egotistical, but I'm not. Everyone knows that. Okay. Yes.
Everybody knows that. I'm saying you're hot. I say it about you all the time. It's the same way you say I'm pretty, and I'm like, nah.
Oh, dude. Okay. All right. Well, yeah, that's.
But I think, you know, because I can look at you and say that you're like, you like, it's unquestionable, Sabine. You can keep saying you're not hot, but it's unquestionable. But you're also very nice and kind and generous and sweet and modest. And I think in our friendship, I've noticed a little bit where I'm like, when you were saying the audience was laughing and you were saying it's all couples, and I'm like, yeah, they don't want to laugh at the hot chick on stage. Like, you had to fight a little harder, which no guy had to do.
No, yeah, exactly. Like, as soon as a guy gets on stage, they were disarmed right away. And I was like, oh, I was so mad. I was livid. I was like, screw you guys. Like, come on. Like, they were all new couples. And I was like, great. So now it's just even more pressure to not laugh at the pretty girl on stage. Like, that, you know, to keep their new couple situation together. So yeah, it's frustrating as hell. It truly is. It makes us have to work harder, probably become better comics, just because we have to figure out ways to go beyond that. And what you were saying about dressing down on stage, I mean, my first like three-ish years of comedy, I made sure to go on stage looking like a mess. I made sure of it. I was like, I'm not gonna wear any makeup. I will be beyond casual, like, because that's the only way I felt that I could get the crowd to trust me, and it was easier to do that, you know. And as a new comedian, you're like, it's already hard, and you want to make sure that you're not, your looks aren't doing anything to the energy in the room. But yeah, you're right. Like now I feel like a lot of female comics are like, no, I want to look good on stage.
Yeah, no. And it's, I love that it's going that way as well. And I think.
Yeah. I want to look good on stage. I love looking good on stage now. I'm like, yeah. I want to wear a cool outfit. I want to look great.
I want to, people said like the same to me. They were like, wow, Katie kind of glowed up in America. And it was like, yeah, I just drew on some eyebrows and like, you know, like bought proper jeans. But it's also like, yeah, I want to look as like, and if that, and that's okay, if that's what makes me feel confident. Because Leland's always laughing at me with the eyebrows. He's like, they look the exact same. I don't know why you do that.
They make a huge difference. Brows are like a whole thing.
Yeah. And I'm like, also it gives me confidence. So
it makes whatever. You feel like, why not? Dude, blush and bronzer on, that gives me confidence, you know, like I need a little bit of color.
Yeah. So also then let's say if you have, like let's say yourself, so if you join a new friend group, or if you have a friend who has a boyfriend and the boyfriend's talking to you, the problem with I think people is they think, oh my god, you know, this is a pretty funny, nice, I'm gonna be upgraded. And it's like, or they might get jealous of friends, like, you know, being like, oh, but she spends more time, she's gonna, you know, if you come into a friend group, let's say if I had a close friend and they were like insecure, they'll be like, oh no, then she's gonna leave me and spend more time with that girl because she's like, and it's all just a, like, it's not the person you're angry with, it's your insecurities. And like that's where people need to start doing the work, because no one's gonna upgrade you, and like no one,
exactly, trust that you're enough, trust that like what you have going on is something, like no one is gonna, if I mean, I don't feel jealousy, I don't feel any kind of weirdness if some woman is like stunning and like nearby me, I just don't, because it's like, yeah, I'm Sabine, like I'm whoever the fuck I am, like I don't care, like it's just me, like whatever is meant for me will come for me, and I have a very specific unique life, and that's just my life, and it's just owning that and realizing that no one can replicate what you have to offer. Like it takes a lot of work to get to that place of understanding that, but I've done that work in therapy. Like I used to be really insecure, and
same.
I was not the pretty girl growing up, and I get it, like I get these dynamics, and like, yeah, I don't have time for people, I just don't have time for insecure people. Like that's where I draw the line, because that gets toxic for me now, and when I see that negative female energy, and when I feel even a hint of it, I'm like, I run away. I'm like, nope, because I want to love you, and I want to push you, and I want to be there supporting you, and if you can't give me that, then you can just get the hell. I don't know if I'm allowed to drop the F-bombs in this.
We talked about, like, masturbation and everything.
Dude, that's, I get frustrated now. I'm like, you can just fuck off, because I want to support my friends and love my friends. I don't give a shit. Like, I've got super hot friends. I love them. Go, prosper. Let's fucking take over. But if people can't handle giving me that love and respect, they can really fuck right off. Like, I don't care. I don't need you.
Yeah, I also think it is sometimes that you have a person, let's say, and they don't see themselves as attractive. And maybe they also don't put in that little extra work where they could do things that make themselves feel attractive. And whatever that is, it's just like, well, A, it's usually just like self-work. Like you said, going to therapy and learning. Because again, the image that they're seeing, it's probably like, it could be body dysmorphia, it could be like face dysmorphia. But then they're like, but I'm the funny one, and I have that, and that's good, and they feel very confident in that. And then they meet someone who's attractive and funny, and they're like, no, but that's my thing, you're not allowed to be both. And it, again, it's just like, no, you're just, that's ridiculous. That's like people that, you know, you, yeah. So that was a side of it I thought might be interesting to put up in this whole conversation of pretty privilege. And I think another thing was I looked up like what are the and it was like a big thing was like self-confidence is the main thing. So they were saying like, oh, pretty attractive people get more higher or get better things in work, but it said it's more down to self-confidence, and it's because they have more self-confidence. So I think in general, yeah, a lot of it's self-confidence. And then it said, I looked up like what are things that attractive people struggle with, it, and it was, there's a fine line between acknowledging your beauty and being, well, actually, I don't know what that means. Never mind. Let me skip that part. A fine line between acknowledging your beauty and being conceited. What does that mean?
Sure. Yeah. Like being conceited and being like, oh my God, I am beyond gorgeous. Like I'm
Yes. Whereas me and you, each time we say like, I'm like, well, certain people say I'm attractive, but also I look like a horse.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, trust me, I've got my angles. I mean, some things work out nice, but it's I'm like anyone else. I struggle with a compliment. But yeah, being conceited, that's just like a different, like, I'm so hot. Like, who are you? Yeah. And what's funny is, like, sometimes I feel like people, yeah, they want me to be a huge bitch. They want me to be a bitchy, pretty person. They enjoy that.
And I'm like, that's so funny, because another one here is, it's hard to convince people that you're nice. And I think that's really true, especially when it comes to women. When I first started comedy in New York City, I'm like, one thing my dad was very strict on was, you gotta be nice, you gotta be polite, you gotta look after people. And a big thing, and like, I think a lot of Irish listeners will also agree with this, a big thing in the culture is politeness is very important. And when you go into someone's place, you better like wash your dishes, you gotta like leave it the way you came. All of that stuff is kind of really inbred into Irish people. So we're very sociable, very charming people in general. And so I just said hi to everybody. I got to know their names. I talked to them. And the more months that went by, the amount of people who came to me going, honestly, I thought that was all like, I didn't trust it. You were too nice. Now I've known you for months, years, let's say. And they will still always go, I didn't trust it. I thought no one's that nice straight away. Like, what's her angle? Bitch, I have no angle. I just like, I like to get talking to people. I like being nice. It makes me feel good. What do you hear? Why? Wow, you think I was trying to rob your like fucking rum and coke at the creek in the cave? I don't understand. Doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it's the same thing with me. People are just like, why is she so nice? Like, what the fuck does she want? That's 100%. I would get that too. People are like, oh, she's just nice. Like, okay. Like, yeah, I've gotten that. I remember in college, there was one girl, I was in an internship with her, Maria, and she like made me really uncomfortable. We had like this whole internship meeting. There were a bunch of other interns sitting there. And it was this marketing thing. And one day she was like, why are you, she just like called me out in front of everyone. And she's like, why are you so nice? And like,
what? Why would that be an issue?
It was an issue. The way she said it, I felt so attacked. Yeah. I'd never been asked that. And then I just didn't know what to say. And all the other guys, the guys and people were looking at me. And I was like, why am I being attacked for like good behavior? And so I'm just like, well, Maria, my dad's really nice. Maybe that's why. I like didn't know how to respond to that.
That's insane that you have to explain yourself. And B, the way her tone says it makes people, because people automatically hear like that tone. They're like, oh, so maybe this isn't something. Maybe Sabine shouldn't be nice, because her tone is like, why are you nice? Like, fuck off.
Oh, God. I was like, this is not, I don't vibe well with people. I don't do well with women that are mean.
Yeah. And the other thing as well, here's the other thing. You could have a gorgeous, gorgeous woman. And like, I will say the women in my life, and especially recently, have been like so supportive. And it's, I feel like I really had made like strong female friendships over here. So I do love women, but on the opposite side, you could have a really good looking woman who is threatened by you. And especially if it's in a male group, because there is situations where there's a woman who gets all of the attention off the lads, and then you're like, hello, and then you're also nice, and she's a bit of a bitch, and she's been getting in that situation, you probably felt threatened. So here's another thing where it's like, she's probably technically a good looking person who feels, oh, I want to be the only technically good looking person. God, us humans are really annoying.
We're so annoying, we're obnoxious. Nice. Is it our society that makes us pit women against each other? I know that. But when it comes to being attractive, it's just like, there's just so much pressure to like, yeah, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you would have to be like, because even like not even just what attract. So I think like some attractive women who are modest, when people are like, oh my God, you're so beautiful, they'll be like, I have IBS like you. I shit myself. Or like, yeah, like, you know, or they're like, well, I had a terrible day.
Yeah, I'm like, but I have things that are wrong with me. Like, it's okay. Like,
yeah. And I think that happens too with, like, I'm very positive, and I got a lot. I feel like, you know, I've gotten a lot in comedy quickly in New York because I worked so hard. I came here, I worked hard, I met the people, I put in the time and effort. But instead of saying that, sometimes you'll have these older guys who are like, oh my God, you're doing so well and things are working out. And I will automatically go, well, I had a shit childhood. So, and it's like, no, I can just, if I had a good childhood, that wouldn't matter. Yeah. It's like, I worked hard. I put in the time. And I think we're always trying to be like, no, don't be jealous of me. I have no roof.
Exactly. What you should be saying is like, yeah, I work my ass off. Have a good day. Like, yeah, it's yeah. like,
yeah, it could be like, I was just lucky I was in the right place that you haven't been. And it's like, it's also because people, there's certain people who work their ass off and they just haven't gotten the same opportunities. And it's like, right. Yeah, it's just a weird thing that you just know that they're comparing and you're like, okay. Another one, let's see, was, oh, so this is another thing about being an attractive person. It's worrisome when your appearance changes as you get older. So I think that's more for people who just base their whole personality on their appearance. So
yeah,
if you're really hot, you know, also work on your personality because we're all going to get old. I woke up with a few extra wrinkles today. So
I did too. I was like, I'm like lack of sleep, no water, aging. Like it's
comedy ages you.
Does.
It's too much. And then,
yeah, the stress of it really gets to you.
And then another one is you may give off the false impression of always being happy. And I think that's just like sort of like if someone looks beautiful, we kind of maybe identify that with like happy and things going well. And
Yeah. Everything's worked out for them their whole life. Yeah. I mean, that prejudgment pisses me off a lot. I had a comedian that did do that to me and like in front of other people. New comedian in a scene that I was in, and not in New York. I don't want to say who it is, but it was like she would make sure that if we were in a group of comedians, she would be like, oh, isn't Sabine so pretty, and like make that such a big deal. And I was like, oh no, this is not what we do here. Like, these are my friends. This is they know me as Sabine, who's, you know, my personality. Like, we don't, that's not something I open conversation with about. Like, I don't talk about that. That's not something that I don't like anyone just making that, just deciding that that's the identity of me they want to be portrayed in this group. She would do that a lot. And it was very toxic. And she had in her mind created a whole story of Sabine's never had to struggle her whole life. She's never had to work for anything. Things have just been given to her. And I had to sit down with her and tell her, like, okay, if that's what you feel like, I don't owe her an explanation, but I was so angry about it. And I was like, I need to let you know, this is not okay. I'm a person. Like, I've been through life, and this is all the life that I've been through. So before you judge me and think that because I happen to look pretty, things have just been wonderful since day one. Like, that's not okay. And it's not the same. Yeah. It's so, I had to sit down with her and actually explain to her my stuff and just to give her, because it's like, it's just, they make you this one dimensional character and you're like, no,
100%.
Excuse me? Like, I'm complex just like you are.
And even if you had a perfect life and everything was great and, you know, you have the perfect family and you've gone through college and things are perfect, like, that's also fine. And it's just like,
that's also fine. Absolutely. Yeah. It was just me being like, this is my history. This is my life.
I know you would feel very defensive about it because also that hasn't been your past.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're like, I went through shit, bitch.
Exactly. I was like, this is so inauthentic. It's making me crazy. Are you kidding me? Like, what I've had to go through. Like, I wish you would even try to figure that out first before you just judge me based on my face.
Yeah. I find it's really frustrating that we have to. I remember when I left, my dad saying something like, I can't remember what the sentence was, but it was something like, you don't like owe an explanation to anybody. And honestly, sometimes when you keep quiet about something, the truth eventually comes out anyway. And I kind of thought, you know what? Yeah, I don't owe anybody an explanation. And I just kept it to myself. So people ran with whatever story or interpretation of her stuff was, but then like the longer and going further, I had maybe like the odd person reach out and be like, actually, I'm so sorry that, you know. And it's like, yeah, you know, but I also was just like, I don't know anybody next, but nobody cared to ask when the shit was going on. You're not getting my fucking explanation now. And that was kind of what I thought at 18. But I think that it is about people, and all the listeners, please listen to this because my therapist said it to me as well. I'm guilty of it as well. But we write narratives for people. We think we know what's going on in their head. And I promise you, we never have a clue. And this happens in so many situations. I've had friends take advantage of me because I've been like, well, do you know what? They've had a bad relationship with their parent, you know, and I should like, and it's like, well, I've had a bad relationship with my parent and I don't treat people like shit.
Yeah, or exactly.
Yeah, or even with my boyfriend, let's say like he went to a friend, ask a friend about me, and I was like, come to me because I promise you that person's not in my head. And he was like, you're totally right. He was like, it made me think something about you that's not real, because how would they know? And I was like, yeah, you got to go to the source. But people write narratives.
They do. And you're right. Like, I've been guilty of it too. Absolutely. But I mean, yeah, people will create a story. They'll create an entire story and get to the point where they hate you. And you're like, what did I do? Like,
because they're going to bed having arguments with you just to, instead of just going, because the hardest thing to admit is, oh, I'm in the wrong, or this is my insecurity, I feel jealous, I wish I was that pretty, or I wish I was that funny, or I wish I was and it's really hard to admit that. It's easier to be like, that person's a cunt.
Yeah.
And it's like, funny, once you admit that, you can start to kind of love those parts of yourself, you know. I think, anyway,
dude, 100%. I mean, like, I know your thing with your mom has been so traumatic, and I, with my brother, and I mean, he had bipolar growing up all throughout high school. That's when it started. He's a couple years older, and it basically flipped his personality. He just became a different person, and he just wouldn't sleep, and he was very manic and took out all his aggression on me. So that's when my self-esteem went straight down. And like, I turned into like, it was so much trauma that I went through. And like, there was a point, I don't know how I was trying to connect that to what we're talking about. What were we just talking about?
Well, just how people write stories. I was nervous to ask you, because also I was like, okay, if you want to, that is like, yeah, something, you know.
I love talking about it because it's been such a big part of my life, just by having to be a caretaker for him, like, and my family. Like, it's just, yeah, like, I think that's where my self-esteem issues came from. But like, it humbles you, man. It humbles you and makes you so thankful for what you have and what you are. And that, like, I don't have to take all these pills. I don't have to be sick all the time. But like, I felt so much, this is what I wanted to say. I felt so much guilt growing up that, that he was the sick one and I was okay. Like, for so many years, I hated myself because I was like, oh, this is just not even fair. Like, he's struggling and I'm out here allowed to just live my life. It's not fair. It's not right. And I had so much internal guilt. And like, it wasn't until like my mid to late 20s where I was like, finally, like, okay, no. We're going to focus on Sabine now. We're going to date. We're going to live. We're going to be alive now. Yeah. We are going to be alive, a person.
Good. And so that makes total sense why you would get defensive when someone tried, and you're like, no, I've been through my shit, okay, this is my time to be happy, like how I look, like who I am, and live my
that's
best
where
life
it comes from. For me personally, it comes from that of not being able to enjoy myself most of my life. I had a beautiful childhood, but that middle part of middle school, high school, brother just being extremely verbally abusive, me locking my door, not knowing how he was, like, being scared. Like, I don't know what his mania is going to make him do. And he's not the villain in this story because, of course, he's struggling too. So there's just so many layers of guilt and sadness. And like, I must protect his story and him, and I must love him, but he hates me. And there's just like, I was sucked into his life my whole life. And now I finally get to live mine. And like, I want to enjoy what I look like. I want to enjoy looking good. I want to enjoy men giving me attention. Like, that stuff I didn't even let myself do because I was like, no, my job is to make sure that, you know, my brother is okay, my parents are okay, everyone in my house is all right. I made that my life. I was like, I'm the caretaker. I have to make sure everyone's all right.
Which is awful as a child and a teen. You shouldn't have to do that. And when he got sick, it's also is about like you grieving your original brother because the part of him has died. Yeah.
He was gone. I was like, what happened? I had a lot of suicidal ideations. So like, I would imagine myself, I was smart enough because I was underparented. My parents were like, it was so focused on him. Sister was raised in Pakistan. So she was like doing her own thing. So I was kind of on my own. Mentally, I was on my own. Therapy was not a thing we talked about in my household. They didn't know about it, whatever. So I was on my own. I had a lot of suicidal, because he was just being so verbally abusive so much. In the middle of the night, he'd start screaming. His meds weren't working properly. And it was just like, you know, we had the cops over every couple of days because, you know, when someone's screaming that much and they're, you think they're going to pop a blood vessel or something, and he would get so intense, we'd have to call the police and they'd come, and they'd somehow authority would calm him down. So he'd see them and he'd be like, oh, okay. I'm like, he would snap out of it in a weird way, but he was still wasn't okay and not balanced. And so he'd be like, oh, I'm good. And so a lot of my jokes come from that, because that was so traumatic, and it's healing for me to find the funny in it, you know, as it that happens. But no, it was just, it was really, really, yeah, I would imagine myself in my grave. I was like, that would be so much better than what this is. That's how I felt. I was like, if I was just in a freaking casket, what would everyone say and do? Like, it was weird. It was weird how I did it. I'd be like, I would imagine my parents around it, and I'd imagine them being sad, and I'd imagine everyone being sad. And then I was like, well, you know what? They all deserve this, because I'm going through something. This sucks for me, and they deserve that I die. Like, it was weird what I was doing. I was having really bad suicidal ideations, and I would never act on it, but I had that stuff. And I was like, and then I was after feeling that way for a while, I was like, I need therapy, because I won't survive this. Like, I knew it. I was like, yeah, either this is going to actually turn into something really dangerous, or I go see a therapist. And because when you know your parents aren't going to do anything because they're trying to find their ways to cope, you're like, I have to figure this shit out.
Yeah. I think when you were saying it was like weird or whatever, I actually think that's quite normal to deal with that situation, because I think as a child, you're probably like, no one's listening. And yeah. And I felt the same when I was like, oh, if I killed myself, oh, they'll finally know. Because it's so hard for you to, like, who would you even tell about what was going on at home? Who are you going to ask for help for? Who is going to step up? And no one knows how to deal with those situations. And as a kid, a lot of the time you'd probably try to take on too much. So it makes perfect sense that you were like, oh, well, if I were dead, they'd finally listen, even though, or they finally see what's going on. Because even as a teen, it's really hard to communicate. And then there's all that guilt, like, you don't want to be, in your situation, maybe you didn't want to be the one who's like, this is a pro, like adding extra stress to your parents.
That was a big thing. I was like, you know, if I'm struggling, I have to be strong for my parents. Yeah. You know, they have one kid in Pakistan they don't get to see, who's like doing her own thing. They got the brother who's like, obviously not okay. I have to be perfect. I have to be this, like, you know, successful, perfect person. And I can't show weakness, and I cannot show sadness, and I cannot show that I'm hurting, because they're hurting. So I was, the amount of responsibility I took on in high school and college was insane.
Yeah.
I don't do
that. How did you step away from it? How did you put in clear boundaries?
I moved.
So did I.
I mean, that was actually the only way. Because when you're so sucked in, like, even if I moved to the city, it's 30 minutes away, I know I would have gotten sucked back in. So I got my therapy, and I was like, I'm going to go to California. I moved to San Francisco. Those 2 years changed my entire life. I was like, oh, I'm a person. Yeah. That, like, for weeks, I just kept realizing that I was allowed to be a person now. And I was allowed to do human things. I was allowed to have friendships and feel happiness. Because he didn't allow that for me. Like, anytime I felt good, I was walking on eggshells, because I didn't know if he was going to tell me to go die, or like whatever garbage he would spew at me. I mean, I'm happy that he takes his meds now and things are better and he's better. I keep my distance now. Like, now I live in a different city. I'm in New York, you know, like, I'm careful. When I see him, he's a funny guy. My brother is so funny and so cool when he's not manic.
Yeah.
But the sad part is, you don't know when it's going to happen. You don't know when he's going to get triggered. He's, you know, we have sibling rivalry on top of that mental illness. So if he sees me successful, that's going to get him into an episode. So I have to go home sometimes just being like, oh yeah, life is just, you know, ugh. Like, I can't celebrate in front of him.
Yeah. That's horrible. And as well, I think what people don't realize when they're like, oh, well, they've taken their meds, or, you know, they're working, they're trying to, you know, be the best version of themselves. And that's great, and do that. But for anyone who's experienced the before, it's very hard to not go and feel like, oh, something might happen again, or to remember that. And so like putting space for you, like, it's like, for me, I will never speak to my mother again, and she'll never take medication, so it's different. But I also just will never speak to her again, because that going back to her would mean having to risk my mental health myself. And like, so for you, every time you meet up, you're so in having to be in control of what you say or what you do, that it's exhausting. And and also a lot of the time with people like that, and no shame to anyone who has it, because I've had friends who are on bipolar medication and it's helped a lot and they're amazing. But it's when it, like, I don't know with my mom if she has bipolar or borderline or something, but being around her makes me question my reality. And so I can't question my reality. And so and I've a friend who got her medication. She's amazing. She's in, you know, she looks after herself, she takes care of herself. So I do believe that can happen, but it's more for like, you said that your brother sometimes doesn't take it.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you have to want to get better. You have to see that, like, you know, you want your life to improve, because you're right. There are people with bipolar and borderline that are like, no, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to figure this out. And they take responsibility for their life. Again, my brother has beautiful qualities. He's a great person when he's not manic, and he's lovable and sweet and kind, all the good things, but he doesn't want to get better. He doesn't want to take those steps. He's too lazy to get better. It's easier to just be manic, yell at someone and go home. And that's something I cannot be around. And it sucks that my parents have to be around it. So I still am dealing with this, but having my boundaries and like pulling away a little bit from his life and just supporting from a distance when I can, that's what I do.
I wonder as well, and oh my God, listeners, don't kill me for this, but I wonder as well if a lot of it is, okay, so you have obviously mental health issues, but then there's learned behavior as well. So when you were in your manic modes, you learn that you get the attention quicker when you're firing off. You wear people down, that they just say, yeah, do whatever you do. So even when you get healthy, is it easy to fall back into that? Actually, if I just shout, I'm going to get what I want. So there might be a bit of that as well, I think. You know, and there's people who do not have mental health issues who do that, who are just like, it's just like, you know,
learn behavior. It is. I agree. I think that my parents, you know, you don't know how to handle someone that's going to be this sick and who's going to be like, you don't know when he's taking his meds. He thinks he can get off his meds. I had a very serious conversation with him recently where I was like, look, you're not special because you have bipolar. My friends have bipolar. People I know have bipolar. That doesn't mean there's something in him where he thinks that like, because he's this sick, he can just like he's such a victim, and we have to see his pain all the time. And if we're not seeing his pain all the time, then that's not okay. That's unacceptable for him. So he tries to share that pain with us, and it's not okay. And so I have to have conversations with him where I'm like, dude, my friends take pills. My friends take medication. Take your medication. Be a human. It's okay. It's okay that you have to take meds.
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, now that I think about it, I'm thinking of more and more people that I know who take their meds, and it's not their identity. They're like, I want to be healthy. I want to be, and I can't imagine though. Another thing I was thinking, I saw this post, a tweet, and it was a joke about like being manic, and how like that high. But it made me, I can't remember what the joke, but it made me think like, it must be hard. The other side of it is, it must be hard to feel a high that we've never felt naturally, because we don't feel mania. And then to really, it's like being an alcoholic. They are technically alcoholics, because they got to go, okay, no, I can't access this drug again, or this mania, because maybe there is a thing of like wanting to feel that like high again, that mania.
It's euphoric for him. Yeah. Because it really upsets my stomach. I think he definitely was a cause of my IBS, like one of the causes.
Yeah. Well, it's childhood trauma is IBS. Yeah.
Yes. For sure was that. And so like, yeah, there's like, when he's manic, I know there's a part of him that's like, it's like a release. It's euphoric. I get it for sure. And it's like, you can feel it, you know, cause he'll be so in like not authentically happy. And everyone can feel that, where he'll be like, Sabine, it's so good to see you. And I'm like, oh no, so bad. And I'm like, and then it's like, now I have to react to this. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, I love you, Sabine. Like, you're the best. And I know that it's shitty that I'm doing an impression of him right now, but like, that's what it is. You have to, because then I have to think about, is this going to turn into him crying? Is this going to turn into him shouting? Is this going to be him? Like, what is this going to lead to? And I have to think about it in that way. So it's, I can't trust it. And I'm like, what moves do I have to make? Do I have to call the police? Do I have to, like, you don't know what to do. And that mania, like, I can see it. I can see that he is enjoying it. And I think that I don't know anymore. It's just so much that it's hard for me to think about how he's going to get better, but I'm hoping that he sticks to his meds, because I think he has potential to get better, but
yeah.
We'll see.
And the main thing, it's not your responsibility. You know?
It's not my responsibility. Yeah. I check in with my sister, I check in with my parents. I'm like, how's he doing? Things good? Okay. Yeah. And I'm out.
And I think that's for any of the listeners. I think we put a lot of guilt and shame on us when it's families, but in the long run, you got to just look after your mental health and put distance. I'm all for leave the country. Okay. You got to go move away, yeah. Give yourself time and distance. Cause also with anything, if it's a breakup, if it's a family breakup, if there's something going on in your life that is toxic, if it's a job, if it's a friend, once you end it and give yourself time and distance, it's until you're out of the fog that you realize, oh fuck, that was toxic, oh fuck, that was bad, oh shit, I'm doing way better. If you don't give yourself that, those months or year space to kind of breathe, and then don't feel guilt, because like, it sounds like for you there was a lot of guilt, a lot of thinking it was your responsibility when it was not at all. And it's shit for him, it is shit, but that's life. It's really some people, and I thank God, I feel so bad for people who've been given that, dealt that hand, especially with mental health. But
because people think the person that's sick is the one that's only struggling, but it's like, think about the caregivers, think about the people around that have to be the punching bag and that want this person to get better and can't, and are like, you know, losing their minds trying to support and give this person the love and care that they need, but that person just isn't getting there. It is so, it just breaks you.
And it can't be an excuse to hurt people. So, you know, people would say, oh, but it sounds like your mom was crazy. I'm like, that doesn't mean I had to have a CIA traumatic childhood. And I'm don't have to have her in my life anymore. And it's like, or, you know, I saw one recently, someone post about a thing being like, so they've been diagnosed with mental health issues, but and like the people who didn't stick by me during, you know, and it's like, I know that the people who didn't stick by this person was because they were, it was traumatic for them. And so you can't just say, oh, actually turns out I had mental health issues. It's like, yeah, that's shit. And that's great that you now know what was, but you still have to be like, I'm so sorry that I caused you trauma, or that I caused you drama. And I think like you look at alcoholics, and I think alcoholism is a great analogy for any of these things, because alcoholism is a disease. It can be inherited, and it technically is a mental health disease because it makes you do things or say things.
I actually didn't think about it like that, but
yeah, because it's more likely inherited. It causes a lot of trauma for you. It causes people to maybe be emotionally or physically abusive that wouldn't be when they're sober, and lose their finances, their family, their friends. Anyway, when they get into an AA program, it's very much like a 12 step, I believe. And one of the steps is apologize to everybody you've hurt. So even though you could say, well, I was drunk, it's still like they got to go and go, look, you know, ownership. Now, I know that the difference is someone could say they choose to drink, but there's been scientific things that say it can be inherited. So they're more likely to just get addicted. They have addictive personalities. So those, I think for people who, if you burn a house and then you find out, oh God, I had like mania, you still got to realize like, shit, that was bad, so that you take the meds. And then you go, I'm so sorry, Sabine, I caused your childhood so much trauma. I'm going to take these meds so you never have to go through that. So my future kids don't have to go through that. So your kids, when I'm an uncle.
But then that's the thing is like, I agree. It's like taking that responsibility of like, yeah, these were my actions, even though I didn't mean them to be, I'm working on myself. It's hard to take responsibility for that kind of stuff. It really is.
Yeah. And of course, as well, like a listener could say, oh, well, it's not their fault because they have like a wire mixed, and we get that. But there's a part where you come down and go, shit, I did all of that. Okay. I got to, when you're in that part where you're like, fuck, okay. Like the way when an alcoholic gets sober and like, okay, shit, I ran that car into that wall. I got to do something. I got to go to AA. So and then the other side is, I don't know. I'll get a guest on at some stage, maybe to talk about medication and mental health in general, who has expertise in it. Cause I knew that there's the medication can cause like shakes and like all these things. So we might just not be at a part in the world where they have great medication. So hopefully that gets better as well with science and all of that. So I do know there's that other aspect.
Right. Exactly. And I do understand how hard it is, but it's like, you know, my brother's had it for like over 10 years. He's been this sick. And so the fact that the medications aren't right, because that's what everyone's been saying. But the thing is, he's an adult man. So it's like, he's just not taking them. And he confides in my cousin and tells him, "Mom, I'm getting off my meds. I'm going to like try this and I'm going to try that." And it's like,
it's so hard.
No wonder life has been hell for my parents, because you won't take your meds properly. Yeah. So it's like, you know, sometimes just being consistent with it is like the solution there. And it's, there's no shame in taking your meds.
Yeah, be consistent. And like, because I've heard things where they're like, "Oh, I don't feel like myself." But then I have my friend who's consistently taking hers for like 6 years. And she's like fun and bubbly. And so I think the key, I think you're right, is maybe consistency, or maybe trying different ones. But
yeah, I know you have to try a different concoction. It's different for everybody. I totally get that. And it does take time because sometimes like the right concoction, even if it's like the wrong one or whatever, it takes like 6 months for it to really kick in and settle into your system. So I get that it could take a few years to like figure it out, but you have to figure it out. Like, you have to be able to communicate that with your therapist. Like, this isn't working. This, let's try, you know?
And your brother has the privilege of being in a family that isn't poor and has health insurance and can afford. Yeah. So there's obviously when talking about this, this isn't covered for people who, like, there's people who don't even have the opportunity to get better, or like they're on the streets and it's awful. So for people who are just living, that's another thing where they should be like, "Oh my God, I'm lucky to maybe like me, I'm in therapy now." And I'm like, "Jeez, I'm lucky that I have this cheap health insurance that covers it for $15. But yeah, it's like, of course. Before we leave, can we do one quick advice thing just for the Patreon? This is amazing. Where can people follow you?
Oh, on Instagram. That's where I am usually, at Sabine Comedy. I have a Twitter. I'm anxious to use it. at Sabine M. Sadiq. I post sometimes and then I delete things right away. But yeah, mostly on Instagram. Okay.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.